Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and I'm here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Each week on Connect the Dots, we connect the dots between your personal health and well-being and that of your community, your society, and the Earth. I'm a longstanding journalist of food, health, and the environment, and I report on Common Dreams, Truth Out, Organic Bites, and other venues, as well as this radio show, which has been running now and is in its ninth year. On Connect the Dots, we talk to different experts, farmers, authors, scientists, doctors, thought leaders, filmmakers, activists, organizers, all kinds of folks about the different facets of our interconnected world and the way they affect our health and our environment. On today's show, I'm delighted to be speaking with Elizabeth Henderson, who is a longtime organic farmer, activist, and writer, who has got a lot to do with the whole evolution and movement for organic food and sustainable agriculture, and has been working on those fronts since the 1970s. Elizabeth Henderson is a founding member of the Northeast Organic Farming Association, NOFA, and has served on the board of the directors for Northeast Organic Farming Association of New York, as well as other organizations and entities. She's also written extensively on organic agriculture, both in publications like The Natural Farmer, as well as co-writing Sharing the Harvest, A Citizen's Guide to Community-Supported Agriculture, and Whole Farm Planning, Ecological Imperatives, Personal Values, and Low Input Practices in the Northeast. She's also written a food book for a sustainable harvest for the members of Peacework Organic Community. So, you know, Elizabeth is, you know, both from the ground up, up to the systemic level, a genuine organic grower, a grower of the movement, and a champion of the movement. Welcome to Connect the Dots. Elizabeth, so happy to have you here.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Now, you know, I sort of picked up the email pad and reached out to you because, as regular listeners to this program know, I both, you know, report in public outlets and venues, and I also am a fervent foodie and food consumer who has supported the organic movement, defended healthy food, promoted healthy food for personal health, and a whole host of things. And among other things, I am also have been, until quite recently, the one of the two chief editors of a newspaper for a prominent Brooklyn co-op, and also reporting for that same newspaper for going on 19 or 20 years at this point. So I'm real immersed in what's going on with food policy and health. And therefore, I was covering the sort of the assault upon the organic label by Driscoll's and other farmers who were fighting to get hydroponically grown berries under the label of the organic, of the certified organic, which, you know, up until the last 5 or so years, no one ever has considered plants grown in plastic, you know, and fed, you know, a little kind of supplemental water to be organically grown. Organically grown always meant planted in soil. But that now is changing, and it really came home to me when I went to my local co-op where we all, you know, really have trusted that the buyers and the shoppers are, you know, buying all the right and most healthy organic things. And there was package after package after package of Driscoll berries sitting on the shelf and absolutely nothing else. And, you know, I asked about it, and people assured me that they must be soil grown because hydroponically grown fruit would not be considered organic, except now it is, because in 2017, the kind of demarcation line was moved to allow this major monocrop producer to slide in and use the organic name. And so that's really why I called you, because I feel people are not aware that this is happening and, you know, need to understand both that it is happening, what is happening, and what the implications are for us as people, as consumers and as long-term supporters of organic farming and regenerative agriculture.
Well, actually, that line was moved back in 2010 when the National Organic Standards Board, which is the Citizens Advisory Council that advises USDA about the National Organic Program, the National Organic Standards Board urged that hydroponic not be included under certified organic. And the National Organic Program staff chose to just not pay attention to that recommendation. So it was at that time that outfits like Driscoll's and Wholesome started expanding their hydroponic production. And then there was a big fight more recently. And what you refer to in 2017 is when the National Organic Program actually said, we're just allowing hydroponic. So people want to avoid hydroponically grown tomatoes and fruit, which are the main berries, which are the main things so far being grown hydroponically and labeled as organic, but without any indication of whether they're hydroponic or not. They need to pay attention to who the certifier is. The certifiers, like, I'm on the board of the Northeast Organic Farming Association of New York, NOFA New York, and NOFA Vermont also has a certification program, Vermont Organic Farmers. If you see our labels on something, they won't be hydroponic, and they won't be from farms that have CAFOs either. And we don't certify eggs where the chickens can go outside on a porch and look at the sky, but don't get to actually be out on the ground and scratch around. Now, certification programs are saying, well, you don't, USDA, you don't have standards for hydroponic yet, so how can we certify operations that are using hydroponic methods? Until you actually have standards, we're not going to do that. But a few of the bigger certifiers, like CCOF, California Certified Organic Farmers, and Oregon TILF and Quality Assurance International, are certifying the hydroponic outfits. And those are growing really quickly, so that probably a large portion of that Driscoll, those Driscoll berries that you saw at the co-op were hydroponically grown. But there's no way that you will know.
And, you know, the decision obviously can be made, you know, at the shelf by the consumer, I won't purchase this. But, you know, what about all of the stores that are stocking it? I mean, you know, and that used to source soil-grown berries by other, you know, produced by other farmers. I mean, like, just, you know, if something like this is happening, you know, where are the places where people can intervene and say, no, I don't want this? And should, you know, places like the co-op, or should wholesale suppliers, you know, rather than it just be an individual shopper, you know, for every box of berries when the berries are already there on the shelf, you know,
Well, there were a few co-ops, I don't know whether Park Slope was one of them, that refused to buy Driscoll berries because of the labor issues that were involved with Driscoll. There was a strike against one of the farms that was supplying Driscoll. That strike, however, was successful, and community to community and Familias Unidas por la Justicia successfully formed a union, and it was recognized by one of the farms that supplies Driscoll. But then I think it would be a really effective way to at least slow Driscoll down if stores like Park Slope and if all of the co-ops, if the, you know, the national cooperative grocers were to say, we're not going to buy organically labeled foods if they come from hydroponic operations. And we're not going to buy organic eggs if they come from farms that just let the chickens out on porches. And we're not going to buy the milk that's coming from the CAFOs. I think that would have a big effect. But first of all, people who belong to those co-ops need to know about this issue, and then they need to take a stand.
Yeah, so
hopefully you will write an article about this for your co-op and get things rolling. I've written a piece for the Abundance Co-op because I write a column, too, for Abundance, which is in Rochester, New York.
Who are these, you know, middle management suppliers that make it so easy for the co-ops to buy these, degrading standard, lowered standard foods, and then for people, you know, in the co-op or in the store to, you know, then they have to kind of push it back. I mean, isn't part of the job of any kind of alternative food store to be, you know, to kind of inform people and kind of be a secondary safeguard? And are they able to perform that function if there are these wholesalers that just, you know, will take whatever is given and not, you know, take a stand? I mean, it should be happening on multiple levels, should it not?
Well, I hope that the people who are listening to this show are aware of the Real Organic Project. It was started by a group of farmers who are selling those soil-grown tomatoes and other crops, and realized that hydroponic was underselling them in the marketplace. So at first, you know, the attitude towards the farmers was, well, you're just sour grapes because people are selling stuff for cheaper. But it's really caught on in a big way among the original organic farmers and the organic farmers who are meeting the standards of soil-grown and chickens on pasture and dairy farms that actually have their cows eat the right amount of grass instead of pretending that they're doing that when they're not. So the Real Organic Project has a website, and a couple weeks ago they held a symposium where they had a series of talks. And one of the people who spoke was a man named Alan Lewis, who works for Natural Grocers, which is a chain of grocery stores. And in his talk at the symposium, Alan spoke about the kind of concentration that's been happening within all of the grocery markets, and most lately within organics, so that smaller farms and smaller suppliers are being crowded out. In order to get space on the shelves, you have to be picked up by the few big suppliers, by United Natural Foods or Kehe, Tree of Life. Those are really the two main suppliers all over the country for stores like Park Slope Co-op. So if Park Slope Co-op wants groceries, they have to buy from them. That's where you get it from. Because United Natural Foods had squeezed out or bought up all of the other smaller regional grocery suppliers that used to exist. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what's been happening. There's a new book that's just coming out entitled The Grocery Story by John Steinman. And he tells what has happened in the grocery world, the level of concentration that has taken place over the past, really, 50 years, but especially in the past 20 years, so that stores like Kroger's and Walmart and Amazon really monopolize the entire markets in some cities and some states where there's hardly any competition at all. And to get on the shelves of those very big grocery stores, you have to pay slotting fees. Or you have to pay some kind of fee so that you become the one who actually goes in and sets up some of the shelves, including your product and the product of other suppliers. But you pay a fee to do that. Instead of the store paying you to sell your stuff, you pay the store to get a space so that you can sell your stuff.
Wow.
And Steinman in Grocery Story tells that story, and then most of the book is about co-ops as the alternative.
Mm-hmm.
So many co-ops have good connections with local farms and smaller suppliers, local producers, and value-added products. But the co-ops do get caught up. If they want certain kinds of products, they may not have any choice if UNFI and Tree of Life are the only suppliers now.
Mm. So this has been kind of creeping up
That's right.
for a number of years, apparently. That's too bad, really. It's terrible. So that's the whole thing. It's always this drive toward consolidation and monopoly. You know, it's amazing. And yet when it begins on day one, people don't see a problem, and then it keeps going down the line, and it becomes a very big problem.
Well, the defense is to get more information and to demand transparency in the marketplace. And a store the size of Park Slope can make that demand. And the cooperative grocers together, the national cooperative grocers, can make that demand. And I think it's time that they start doing it. Because if you want to have family-scale organic farms growing in soil, supplying your store, you're going to help us out.
Mm-hmm.
You asked me what percentage of the food, organic food that's sold in this country is supplied by United States farms. And just like the past few days, the Census of Agriculture came out. And I've also been rummaging around in various reports to get that information, because the Organic Trade Association has been crowing recently that the entire organic market in this country has reached $50 billion. But what's coming from United States farms, all of the sales from all of the farms, according to the census, is about $7 billion. So the $43 billion, the rest of it, is the processed foods.
Wow.
And in those processed foods that there's a lot of imported organic ingredients from other countries. Some of it, of course, is made out of U.S. organically grown food, but more and more the ingredients are being imported.
And what are the implications of that? Does that mean that they're lesser quality? Does it mean that it's not supporting farmers here? I mean, I imagine it definitely means that.
But what it usually means is that it's cheaper if you buy it from somewhere else. So the manufacturers of organic products are not doing everything that they could to ensure that more farms in the United States transition to organic methods.
Yes.
If they really did that, you know, there would be a lot more organic acreage in the United States.
Yes. So they're looking at the shelf price. They're bringing it over. Are there, you know, in other words, there's an actual competition between the original growers and these kind of, you know, monopolistic businesses. I mean, their interest is, I suppose, in getting the lowest possible price, or, you know, that's usually the MO there. But, you know, why?
Yeah, that's what I think. That's what I think is happening. They're buying from countries that have lower labor costs. If you grow your organic food down in Mexico, workers there earn in a week what they earn in an hour in the United States. So it means that the processor can have much bigger profits than if they pay a decent price, a fair price, to U.S. farmers.
Yeah. So there's nobody really looking out for that, for the U.S. farmers. And then we have these rural regions where, you know, the earth gets depleted, the people get disaffected, and then, you know, we call them deplorables or something as a result. I mean, you know, it would seem to make, you know, more sense, you know, not to, you know, to intervene in that. It's very, obviously, it's not a cycle that does us any good, you know.
Well, in European countries, the European Union actually has a policy where they pay farmers for ecological practices. Farmers get payment per acre or per practice for doing things that add carbon to the soil or that help clean up the water or that create a more beautiful rural landscape. Like in England, farmers get some payment for maintaining the hedges that makes it really pretty to drive through the English countryside. In the United States, there's much less of that kind of support for farmers. And there is some money in the farm bill that goes to farmers to help them pay for cover crops, for example, and to convert to organic. But it's a very small part of the funding in the farm bill. And as the prices have been going down because of competition from cheaper product from abroad and also because of the hydroponic operations and the CAFO so-called organic farms that are able to produce milk much more cheaply, the incentive for U.S. farmers to convert is much smaller. They just can't afford to do that. It takes 3 years to get through conversion, and you have to have markets that are supportive for a farm to take that risk.
So, you know, and I suppose the locals or the state legislators in the areas where this is happening, you know, are they kind of bought out or bought and sold to the you know, the larger companies, so they're not actually protecting their local communities, or do they kind of play the game both ways where, you know, they're pretending they are, but maybe they are or they aren't? I mean, what's going on with that? Because, I mean, it would seem if you're having this kind of, depletion, you know, suicides, problems, going out of business, bankruptcies, you know, one would hope or imagine that possibly the elected officials might be taking the initiative to defend, you know, the people of their region. Is that happening, or is that just kind of a ridiculous pipe dream, given the state of things in America?
I think that's probably happening in some towns and maybe some counties. I can't point you to cases of that, but most of the food policy in this council is on, in this country, is on the federal level, and it's governed by the Farm Bill. And the Farm Bill provides support for the industrial monocrop farms. It used to be price supports, but the way the support happens now is by subsidizing crop insurance. So the bigger your farm, the more subsidized crop insurance you can purchase. And that, in this latest farm bill, they actually made the regulations about who can access that money looser, so that it's not just the individual farmer, but they can restructure their 10,000-acre farm so that it's shared by several aunts and uncles or cousins, and they can all get a cut of that insurance subsidy money.
And so that's that. Is that a good thing, that other relatives can participate, or does that become
No, they're not people who are farming at all.
Oh, my goodness.
The National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition, of which NOFA, the organization that I'm on the board of, the Northeast Organic Farming Association, we're a member of NSAC and the National Organic Coalition, NOC. Mm-hmm. And our organizations tried very hard to make sure that the farm bill funding would only go to people who are actually practicing on the farms, managing the farms, and present there doing that work.
Mm-hmm.
But the language in the farm bill is makes it open to many relatives who really aren't there. They're just taking the money and not doing the farm work.
And crazy.
There is money in the farm bill for some very good programs. There is more money in the farm bill this time for organic research and for breeding local varieties and for cost share for the price of organic certification. So a farm the size of the one that I used to manage, our gross sales were about $110,000, $120,000 a year. And our certification, the price was about $1,200 a year. We could get up to $750 to cover the cost of the certification. So it made it quite affordable.
Mm-hmm.
So that is still part of the farm bill.
Mm-hmm.
But for a family-scale farm, that might be the only federal money you're getting, whereas there are farms that grow thousands of acres that might get up to $1 million through the subsidized crop insurance.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, that's...
So the farm bill has done nothing to change the structure of agriculture. It's supporting the industrial monocrop farms. It has done nothing to reduce the use of pesticides and herbicides that are overused and that are contaminating air and water and that cause the big dead zone at the delta of the Mississippi. There were a few attempts to increase a few little parts of the farm bill that would have made it a little fairer for farms who wanted to sell beef and other livestock. But the big suppliers have fought that back. So any attempt to reduce concentration and to make markets more fair are not present in the present farm bill.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why people like me have said we need to support a Green New Deal that will be an emergency program to save the planet by reducing fossil fuel emissions and also by enabling family-scale farms to make a living by having parity pricing and supply management, because only farms that are making a living can really pay attention and use the great practices that enable farmers to plant cover crops and rotate and reduce tillage and put carbon in the soil where it does us some good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we have multiple reasons for wanting to bring that about.
It's a win-win-win-win-win. When family-scale farms get fair prices, then they can use better practices, then you get higher quality food. It mitigates climate change. It improves water retention and reduces the effect of, you know, the big inundative rainstorms that we're getting. It makes the water cleaner. It's just a win in multiple ways, intersectionally all at once.
That's funny. Yes, this is the true intersectionalism, or it's a different kind of intersectionalism that has to do with ecobiology.
Yeah, no,
I totally get that. You know, I'd be curious. I'm sure you must have thought about this, because it's almost like some of the intersectionality that needs to happen is between, you know, urban and rural people. And between people who are connecting with the earth a lot. It's almost like connecting with the earth is, you know, there's a deprivation of that in the overall culture. And here are you guys who are specialists in it, you know, and, you know, you're operating under these conditions that really denigrate the earth and denigrate that function. And I think it's something that... you know, urban folks, and I'm somebody who's kind of a back-and-forth crossover, really, don't understand, because in the city, it's like the idea that something is cheap, that it can be done in a warehouse there, that someone can make a profit from it, you know, all of that is, like, good stuff, you know. So we kind of, we're sort of... you know, there's a difference in values and experience where it almost seems like, you know, there needs to be more of a crossover happening or a dialogue happening, because these are, you know, two very different ways of being in the world, and yet they're interdependent in some way.
Well, that's absolutely right. I mean, farmers like me, the life that I chose to lead and have no regrets about living, are in like a totally different economy from what you experience living in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
You spend on your apartment more than I spend on my farm for an entire year.
Mm-hmm.
I never earned more than $11 an hour farming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
To be an organic farmer, you're taking vows of poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, a lot of farms are finally going out of business because you can only lose money for so long.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The farm crisis of the late 70s and 80s never went away, and it's getting worse again. So it's resurfacing with a vengeance. And it's because we haven't had a system of pricing that covers farms' costs of production. Most of the farmers that I know make a decent living because somebody in the family works off the farm, or the farmer does that himself,
right.
A part-time farmer.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Wow, this is this is a real close-up look at what's really going on. And, not that different from being a journalist, I can tell you, except for the, it's a similar kind of thing in a time where, you know, you have this mass journalism, but journalism of integrity that isn't, you know, bought in any kind of way, that's, you know, it's in shorter supply. And a lot of people...
Well, that's true. I mean, there have been such massive cutbacks in journalism that parallels what's happening in farming.
Mm-hmm.
And we need both. We need people who will write the truth, but we also need high-quality, nutrient-dense food.
Yes, we do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really true. It's so interesting. You know, the thing, too, is that on the other side, you know, one of the things that I've noticed as well, because I've been promoting healthy nutrition for, you know, 25 to 30 years from, you know, the side of what I do. But the the price you pay when you don't have it comes into play more as you age. It's hard to describe that to younger people, I find, you know, because it's such a different experience. But there's
a
lot that you can...
Well, people start paying attention to what they're eating and buying when they have babies. You know, in my CSA, that's what I saw, that people would have a baby and then they would join because they were starting to think about what they were feeding the next generation. And people listening to this show, I hope many of you will consider joining the Northeast Organic Farming Association of New York. It's a statewide organization. It's a farming organization, not a farmers organization, and about half of our members are non-farmers. They're people who care about organic food. And when you become a member, you support our work in defending the integrity of the organic label. We are working very hard to pressure the National Organic Program to not certify as organic the hydroponic operations and to do proper accreditation of the certifiers that are allowing the CAFO-style organic dairies to produce way lower quality organic milk. So joining with NOFA, you can come to our wonderful conferences and learn about organic food and cooking organic and bringing up a child who has the backbone to be the only kid in the class who's eating whole wheat sandwiches when everybody else is eating white bread. Those are the kinds of things that we think about.
That's really funny. No,
so
I totally get that.
NOFA is for everybody who's listening to this show, and we need your support.
And so how do we find NOFA online?
Well, it's NOFANY.org, NOFA New York.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to the website, you can find our listing of where organic foods are all over the state. You can look at the list of organic farms, and you can join NOFA and find out about the policy work that we're doing. On the state level, we are working together with a lot of allies to push for bans on some of the toxic materials that are very widely used in New York agriculture, but also in parks and in people's backyards, to ban chlorpyrifos, to ban glyphosate, which is the main ingredient in Roundup, to ban the neonicotinoid pesticides that are killing off our pollinators, the bees and the birds. So we're working with outfit organizations like Friends of the Earth and Food and Water Watch, Sierra Club, to ban those toxic materials. And we're, of course, up against the Farm Bureau, which will defend those toxics as absolutely necessary to producing food, which isn't true, because we don't need them on organic farms, and we can produce quite a lot of food. And we're also working with a really growing, wonderful coalition that is going to make New York State have a great statewide program for soil health. And that isn't in the form yet of legislation that people can work for, because it's the groundwork that's being done this year, but next year there will be legislation that people can push for.
That's fantastic. So that's coming up. You know, it's it's kind of, it's like being committed to healthy food. It's really, it was originally promoted, and I was part of this, as an individual path. You know, what I eat, I eat this, this is healthy, I know how to make that, and all of that kind of thing. But actually, it's really a social path, and it's a global path, because, you know, unless we have the right rules and regulations and the right decision-making, ultimately, in our society on the social level, on the societal level, then, you know, we'll see all of this tremendous living potential for health of living systems eroded, you know, progressively, you know, or degressively more and more eroded. And so we really have to take a stand for it. And, of course, the whole climate fight, which the Green New Deal is, you know, about, is really the ultimate, you know, kind of engagement fight for life, you know, really is.
Absolutely.
So,
and a very simple way of taking a stand is by joining a New York community-supported agriculture farm and getting your food directly from a farm that supports that farm, or shopping at farmers' markets where you're buying direct, because that cuts out the middlemen. Or if you're buying in stores, looking for the certified organic label, but certified by NOFA New York or certified by Vermont Organic Farmers or the Ohio Ecological Food and Farming Association, looking for those really high-quality organic labels so that you are getting the kind of food you hope that you're buying when you're paying the money for organic.
Right.
People
just have
to become more sophisticated about the different labels.
Definitely. Well, that's really... Yeah, that whole idea that we trust and it's all covered, you know, is kind of, you know, if you're paying attention, it's kind of not happening that way so much anymore. And so it demands more of us.
Unfortunately, you know,
when
we wrote organic, when we wrote the organic standards, it was people like me and people who wanted to eat my food who were just innocents out there in the world. We had no idea how big companies would be able to get around what we said, what we wrote. We thought it was all pretty clear and simple. A farm, an animal has access to the outdoors. Well, that means the animal goes out and it walks around in your pasture. I could never have imagined that access to the outdoors could mean just looking up at the sky from a porch. It would never have occurred to me.
Another way
that people can help New York organic farmers is by paying attention to a piece of legislation that's going through right now, which is the Farm Worker Fair Labor Practices Bill. It's a bill that will bring needed justice for farm workers. NOFA and our farmers absolutely support the need for fairness for farm workers. But we really beg for time and a half for overtime being phased in a way that makes it possible for us to make those payments by adjusting over several years. When the minimum wage was raised in New York State, employers were given a few years to implement that. Bringing about time and a half for overtime for farm work has to be implemented in the same way, somewhat gradually, because farms don't have very much control over the price that we get. And right now, farms are being squeezed very badly, and there are many going out of business, even without having to pay time and a half for overtime. If that is implemented immediately, which is the language of the bill that's before the assembly, it needs to be negotiated so that it's phased in gradually.
Yeah, I can really I can see why that would be. You don't want to throw out the baby until you have parity. You kind of can't just. There's a risk of throwing the baby out with the bathwater there. So
exactly.
Parity
payments mean that farmers would get prices for whatever they're selling that would provide, it would be enough money to provide living wages for the farmers and the people who work on their farms. That has to be part of the farm budget. And that's that's the vision that NOFA is trying to move towards. But it's really difficult in the kind of economy that we have where there's increasing concentration of both the retail and the input side in farming, so that the farmer part of the consumer dollar gets smaller and smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And farmers are just being squeezed on all sides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it's taken out on the farm workers. You know, they're the ones who have the least power.
Mm-hmm.
So they need understanding and support so that they don't, especially undocumented farm workers, they don't have a leg to stand on. They're not organized. There are some incredibly courageous undocumented dairy farm workers who have formed the Alianza Agricola in upstate New York and who are organizing so that they can get licenses for the undocumented. That was the first thing that they demand. So the Green Lights New York campaign is something that everybody should support, and that's something we should pass this year in the New York legislature. But the next thing that undocumented farm workers need is fair pricing for the farms so that farmers can afford to pay decent wages.
Mm-hmm.
Just,
mm-hmm.
You know, the Farm Worker Fair Labor Practices Bill will recognize farm workers' right to organize, and that's certainly very important. But in California, farm workers have had that right now for about 25 or 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And despite enormous efforts on the part of the United Farm Workers and other farm worker organizations in California, only 1% of the farm workers are unionized.
Mm.
It's incredibly hard to organize farm workers, especially those who are undocumented, because
mm-hmm.
they have so little ability to make their views known. Politicians
mm-hmm.
don't care about them because they don't vote.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so much that needs to be changed to bring the whole food system out of the cesspool that it's been in.
Mm-hmm.
You
yeah,
don't notice it when you're in the grocery store. Everything is beautifully packaged and bright and cheery. But the
mm-hmm.
reality is that most of that food has been picked and packed by undocumented, underpaid people, or if it's organic, by farmers who are barely making a living providing that food for the store.
Hmm. Wow.
We need a big, noisy movement, like the Green New Deal, like the Sunrise people, but they need to understand where rural people are coming from, the kind of support
mm-hmm.
that we need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's really true. I think, you know, there's more and more beginning to get it, because I think, I mean, what I've seen is that there's tremendous receptivity, and if those dialogues can happen, I think they can be very fruitful, and very, you know, they're very important. I'm all in favor of that. I think it's, but it's not easy because they're also two different kinds of conversations and two different languages of understanding. And then, you know, there aren't too many places where they actually physically, they're meeting, you know, around the food, but both parties aren't there and aren't speaking. So it's a very silent conversation, but it's a very important one, you know.
Well, one of the very popular workshops that we held at the NOFO Winter Conference in Saratoga Springs this past year was a workshop where we had a couple farmers and a farm worker talk about their real situations.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of panel discussion that we need to promote.
Mm-hmm.
So that people who live in the city and people who really have great goodwill and want to see healthy food and a healthy countryside understand what
mm-hmm.
the issues are and hear the genuine voices of people who are living through really very hard times because of the industrial food system that we have.
Yes. Yep. Well, I mean, the more we're having the conversation, the more I'm realizing how incredibly important that is. Because, I mean, in that conversation is healing a divide in this country, actually, and something that really is quite fundamental to life and our connection to being alive and to the life forms all over on Earth. And, you know, in fact, all of these industrial methods have really done harm to plants, to animals, to people, to pollinators. You know, it's just, you know, we've been doing very harmful things, and we're not going to get a good outcome from that, you know, when you keep doing...
Well, you know, talking together, it occurs to me that I could arrange for you to interview some of the people that I'm talking about. If you wanted to interview some of the undocumented workers from Alianza Agricola, or the farmers who are having trouble finding enough local labor and so turn to H-2A, or run the risk of being charged with a felony because they've hired undocumented workers.
Mm. Well, it's such so ironic, you know, that some of the larger forces in the society are, you know, trying to get rid of the very people that we actually need, you know. I mean, it's just when you think about it, of course, they're doing that on multiple levels, so why should we be surprised? But, it, you know, it is still rather astounding. Yeah, I'd love to have those conversations. And actually, we're coming to the end of our time here on Connect the Dots. But, you know, it's, you know, sometimes, like, there is no immediate solution, but there are multiple next step things forward that need to happen. And I feel that's where this conversation today with you you know, has landed us. And, you know, listeners, we've been talking with organic farmer, advocate, and writer Elizabeth Henderson. And, you know, please do share the program, which will be available in the Connect the Dots podbean.com later today with other people so that more are really informed and aware of, you know, we're playing fast and loose with our you know, our subsistence, our sustenance, and the people who provide it. You know, not smart. That's all I can say. It's like really not smart. We need to become more conscious and connected and tuned in and activated about that. Thank you so much, Elizabeth, for joining me today on Connect the Dots. And, yes, I'd love to continue the conversations that, you know, you've unfolded here, and really am grateful.
Well, thank you for having me, and I'll be happy to put you in touch with some more voices from the countryside.
Sounds great. That sounds wonderful. Thank you so much for the work you do and have been doing, and thank you for the food, you know, that you've grown and helped to, you know, support in advance, you know, that has been keeping us alive. You know, has been nourishing so many people, and I'm one of them. So thank you very much.
Farming is a really good way of life, and it's very satisfying growing food for people who are appreciative.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope that we can create better supports so that the next generation of people can have this blessing, and the people they feed can have the blessing too. So, you know, that's my commitment to this. And our commitment. So, yeah, may that be.
Well,
may that be
according
so.
to the Census of Agriculture that just came out, the 2017 mm-hmm. census, there are more young mm-hmm. farmers than there used to be.
Mm-hmm.
We need to change the economy so that those young farmers can make a living doing at it and will stick with it for their lifetimes.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, maybe some people involved in the Green New Deal now, some of the younger generation, will be taking that pathway. So we all have to work together and clear the way. All right. Thank you, listeners, for being with us on today's very inspirational Connect the Dots. We'll be back next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. I'm Allison Rose Levy. You know, follow through on the actions we've been discussing on today's show, and the, you know, stand tall and keep marching forward in company with all our relations.
Well, 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 well.